lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds. Welcome back to another, and of course, another win for Hamilton as well. So 102 pole positions now and 102 wins as well. My OCD is very much enjoying those numbers. it was actually a better race than I thought it was going to be. When I saw, you know, the practice and the qualifying and all the penalties that were being given out at the time, I thought, oh, and I think I even texted you, didn't I, and said, I just think that they've ruined this race. They've given too many penalties out. It's getting too complex. It's too confusing. Too many drivers are getting moved to the back of the grid. It's going to end up being a rubbish race and they won't be able to overtake. And then a couple of laps in, I think I texted you going, okay, yeah, take it back. Yeah. And it ended up being a really good race and a nice little track, actually.
Yeah, a really interesting track because we, you know, I saw the track plan at first and thought, well, there's maybe one overtaking place there, which is turn one, and the rest of it is, you know, long and sweeping corners, high speed corners, medium speed corners, which will undoubtedly suit the Mercedes, which ultimately it proved to be the case. But I was really interested in the way they were able to follow around this circuit. They were following really quite closely. There was lots of overtaking going on, and the opening few laps of the race itself were fantastic, I thought, especially if you were a Max Verstappen fan. But let's talk about what led up to that. It was qualification, and this is where the FIA just shoots itself in the foot, I think, so often. They have these very strict, stringent rules, and then they kind of go against them and cover their own backs by saying, well, it was the marshal and it wasn't us. So in qualification, as you will recall, Max Verstappen gets a 5-place grid penalty. Valtteri Bottas gets a 3-place grid penalty. And this was for not slowing down under yellows. I don't know if you saw the footage, but it was towards the end of their quali runs, and Pierre Gasly's car had come to a halt at the side of the track. Now, the FIA and the race director didn't put the yellow flag boards out. They didn't cancel DRS, and the track, as far as they was concerned, was green, but the marshal opposite where the car had stopped had done the right thing. He's a trained marshal. He put his yellow flag out to say there was an obstruction on the circuit, and when the car finally came to a halt, he put a double waved yellow flag out, which is what he's supposed to do. He's doing what he's supposed to do. That's what the training is for. But normally on the driver's dashboard, they get a yellow light to indicate there's a yellow flag zone ahead. That didn't happen because the FIA didn't issue it. And normally in a yellow flag zone on a start finish straight, they would disable DRS, which again didn't happen. The DRS was still available to all drivers who are entering that start-finish straight. So therein lies the problem. Now, of course, the FIA say you can never ignore a yellow flag, and I believe in that because it's there for safety. But there was a communications breakdown there, and I don't really think it was fair on the teams. And if you look at the onboard footage, that yellow flag was impossible to see in the dark conditions. The flag was also sort of pointing straight down the start-finish track, so you couldn't see the yellowness of it, if you know what I mean. And I thought it was really harsh that the FIA gave those penalties to Bottas and to Verstappen.
Yeah, like you say, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because, like you say, the flags are there for a reason. The marshal's doing exactly what he's trained to do and meant to do. It is dangerous when you've got a car on track, particularly if a car's stopped, because, you know, those Formula One cars are travelling towards that car at such ridiculous speed. And, you know, nobody wants to see anybody hurt or injured on a racetrack. It's the last thing any of us want to see. We're there for the entertainment and the racing. So, yeah, he did the right thing. It's just a breakdown in communication, isn't it? Because one of the reasons they introduced those lights years ago was because the drivers struggled to see the flags. They're like, right, okay, well, let's put some big bright lights there as well. Stick some lights on their dashboard and then, you know, no excuses to miss it. And any driver will get all the information they need in front of their eyes. Like you say, you know, it's a dusky, dark race. They're not looking for flags necessarily. So I think it was just one of those scenarios where it was awkward. And you kind of at the end, you go, well, yeah, I mean, should they have given those penalties? Should they have not given those penalties? It's, you know, it's one of those questions that you just go around in circles. I just felt like it was a bit of a shame in terms of, like you say, the drivers and the teams and the FIA all kind of had different opinions on it. Christian Horner got himself in a pickle, didn't he, by sort of saying some stuff on Sky that he shouldn't have done and got called in and got told off, got a rollicking, shall we say. So, it's difficult. I've told that story before on the podcast where I was in the MR2 championship and there was a crash. It was at Silverstone and it was a friend of mine was in a very similar car to somebody else. So I was on the right-hand side of the track, looking over to the right-hand side to see if I could see what car it was, to see if I could work out which driver it was that had had the crash. And on my left-hand side, there was yellow flags waving, which I wasn't looking that direction. I was looking towards the right. And I slightly passed the car on the right-hand side, but the other end of the track, this car was on the left of the track. So I passed the car, but if you can imagine, I'm sort of three car lengths away in the width of the track. Now, I ended up getting 3 points on my license and got a massive telling off and got a little fine and all that for that. Now, I understand that, but again, it's a similar scenario where I'm looking to the right-hand side. These are not excuses, but my eyesight was completely the other side of the track, looking at what the car was. Wasn't doing anything dangerous. I was going very slowly. And I was a bit miffed at the time at that, but I understand why they did it, because the whole point of yellow flags is, you know, they've got to be there for a reason. You've got to be careful. So I see both sides of the story. I just think it's, like you say, very difficult when the FIA don't issue the yellow flags, when the FIA don't issue anything at all. So the driver's not seeing any steering wheel, he's not seeing any lights, but there is equally a yellow flag. Technically, you're breaking the rules, but it's a tough one, isn't it?
It is. You know, three fail safes that they introduced into Formula One so that drivers wouldn't miss yellow flags. One of them was a yellow light on their dashboard to indicate a yellow flag zone. The second one was the big yellow light panels at the side of the track. And the third one is that the teams get a notification as well. So if everything else fails, the teams can radio the driver to say, yellow flag, slow down. Those three things never happened. The only thing that did happen was the marshal putting his yellow flag out. So all of those fail safes were missed. And I just thought it was a little bit harsh. Having said that, though, Max Verstappen was due to start the race in second, which meant he would have started on the dirty side of the circuit. And it was very dusty and slippery offline. He eventually starts in fifth, which was on the clean side of the circuit. And we saw from lap one just how many places he made up. It was a brilliant opening lap from Verstappen. And actually starting in fifth may have done himself some favours.
Yeah, my concern was Hamilton was going to run away with it and it was going to be game over and Verstappen wouldn't be able to pass. But like you say, he had an absolutely mega start to the race. And those two are just in a different league, aren't they? Just, you look at the other drivers on the track. I mean, there's a couple of drivers that are close to them, but even Sergio and Bottas in the same two cars, you know, just nowhere near Verstappen and Hamilton. They are literally in a league of their own at the moment. And I think it's definitely, you know, Verstappen is pushing Hamilton so hard. Hamilton's up in his game even more than before. And then Hamilton's pushing back. So Verstappen's up in his game. And it's great for us as fans. But you literally have these two drivers that are just leaps and bounds ahead of anyone else. And it really is a classic season so far this year. You know, straight away, the end of lap one, we're like, okay, they're 1-2. We're back to status quo. This is kind of what we wanted and expected. Let's see what happens here. And we saw Perez fighting his way through. And poor old Perez, every time he pitted, he seemed to come out with about 27 cars that he had to overtake. But he was flying in the race as well. And, you know, Perez is really upped his game as the number two driver. I think it was what we were lacking a little bit. Gasly, I don't think, was ready at the time. Albon struggled as well in that car. So I think Perez getting up there now is what Red Bull have wanted and what we have wanted as a viewer as well, because it spiced things up. Bottas, you know, Bottas just struggles, doesn't he? If he's not out front and he's not leading the race, you know, the minute he has a bit of an issue and he's back a few places, he seems to just struggle to slice through the field. He just doesn't do what Hamilton does. Hamilton will do all these overtakes and get himself up there. Bottas just seems happy to poodle around in 15th or 12th place if he's back that far. So, you know, these drivers are just different league, but this is a vintage season with two races to go.
Yeah, it really is. Martin Brundle said on the Sky coverage he can't remember tension like it towards the end of a season, even back when Senna and Prost were racing each other. He said the tension is really at a maximum level at the moment. I think you're right about Bottas. I've always said his racecraft just doesn't come up to par as far as comparing himself to the likes of Hamilton. It's nowhere near. You know, he's pretty good on a one-lap qualifying run, but when he gets in the thick of it with other cars and teams, he struggles to overtake, he struggles to follow, he struggles to pull out gaps between him and cars behind him. And it was another disappointing session for Bottas, and I think probably another reason why Mercedes have gone, yeah, you know what, we're dropping you at the end of this season, unfortunately for him. Yeah, the Hamilton-Verstappen thing is bizarre. I mean, I think 15, 20 laps in, those two cars were a full minute ahead of any other cars on the circuit, but they managed to stay with each other. I know the gap was around about 10 seconds between Hamilton and Verstappen, and we know that Hamilton's straight line speed is fairly immense. One thing I noticed was that the new power unit they used in Hamilton's car in Brazil was not used in Qatar. So they've saved that one for Saudi, which means he's going to have even more straight line speed when we go to Saudi Arabia in a couple of weeks' time. So that's going to make it really interesting. Mathematically, Max can win the championship in Saudi Arabia, but there's a load of permutations there. So if Lewis fails to score or doesn't finish, Max needs second or above. If Lewis finishes in sixth, Max needs to win the race and get fastest lap to wrap up the championship. I'm pretty sure it's going to go down to the wire in Abu Dhabi. But one thing that intrigues me about Saudi Arabia, I think this is going to be one of the races of the decade. And the reason I say that is because of the track. I don't know if you've seen the layout, but it's very fast sweeping blind corners on a street circuit. So there is no runoff, hardly any curbs. It's literally surrounded by concrete walls, a bit like Baku. But unlike Baku, nearly every corner is high speed. So basically, it's a sort of in and out circuit. They've got high speed corners all the way to the end of the track, and then a fairly tight hairpin, and then high speed corners all the way to the other end of the track, and then another tight hairpin before the start finish straight. I think it's going to be a fascinating race, which will see lots of people come a cropper in the walls, and we're going to get lots of drama in the opening laps. I can foresee it now. I think there's much more drama to come in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and I think the beauty this season has been that we've been to a lot of tracks that are brand new. We've been to a lot of tracks that have been modernized slightly and changed slightly. We've been to a lot of tracks where the teams are expected to do well and they haven't, or vice versa. And it's just been it's been that wonderful combination this season of, you know, cars that we didn't think would do well did do well, and engines that we didn't think would do well have done better than we thought. And, you know, like McLaren's winning, for example, in Italy. You know, there's been so many things that have happened this season where you're going, well, I didn't see that coming. And it's, you know, it's just kept it alive. It's been absolutely brilliant. I'm excited for the last two races of the season. Very hot, obviously, very dusty because they're both out that way and in the desert. I mean, anything can happen. My hope is we don't have some form of accident. I really hope another driver particularly doesn't take out one of the top two, you know, because if a driver, let's say one of the drivers, Hamilton or Verstappen, starts the race in 10th or whatever, and a driver takes them out on the first lap and that's their world championship over, that would be a sad way for it to end, I think. I mean, that's the luck of the draw. Sometimes that happens. But, you know, I'd like to see these two fight until the very end. It's so close now. I think it's 8 points, isn't it, between the two of them? So I think if Hamilton wins the next two races and Verstappen is second in the next two races, Hamilton will win the title. I think if, it, like you say, Max can technically win it at the next track, but I just don't see that happening. And there's so many possibilities now, and we're down to the last two races, and I just love it when we get this close. And, you know, it's still all to play for. One of the worst seasons for me in F1 is when a driver wins the world title like just over halfway through the season. He's won so many points, he's like, well, that's me done, I've won the title. And then it's just all a bit pointless after that, isn't it? So that's the great thing about this year, is we're definitely not going to get that.
Let's talk about Fernando Alonso. A brilliant return to the podium. Unbelievable. Alain Prost, who works for Alpine as a consultant, said he is the best driver in Formula One. We've seen all season that Alonso has been really feisty in that car. He hasn't had the best power behind him, but he's made the most overtakes of any driver this season. He continued to do that on Sunday in Qatar, and I just thought it was a beautiful drive from start to finish from Alonso. Most of us thought he might get into the lead in turn one because he's starting from third on the grid. That didn't quite happen, but he stuck at it and he did a really good job, and it was great to see him on the podium.
Yeah, Alonso for me is very much like Vettel this year. He's come back to Formula One. He's in that Alpine team and he just seems really chilled and laid back, which is unlike him. He's been quite feisty in past years. You know, we've always seen that sort of side to Alonso where he can get a bit aggressive on the radio and stuff. And there's nothing wrong with that. But he seems to have come back really chilled, really relaxed, really laid back. And he's just really enjoying himself. He's going out there racing these cars and he's loving every minute of it. And it's just really good to see. But I've always been a massive Alonso fan. But there's just something that's happened since he's returned that just makes me like him even more. He's more endearing, I think it is. And, like, you know, it's like Vettel. We've mentioned him before. He seems really relaxed and really chilled, and he's doing a lot of good stuff outside the sport as well. And I just think it's great to see these two. You know, Alonso, like you say, is into his 40s now. You know, I think the last time we had somebody on the podium in their 40s, we were talking names like Nigel Mansell as well, which is, you know, you're going back a long time. And, you know, it's great. It's proof that just because you're in your 40s, it doesn't matter. He's got to be one of the most all-rounded complete drivers in the world. I think he's fast in anything you put him in. You know, he's won so many different series and formulas, and he goes away and Do you remember he was in the Indy race a couple of years ago, and he was just flying through that, and it was like, he could win this. And he's one of those drivers that you can never discount Alonso. He's always up there.
Yeah, he certainly is. Other teams that struggled over the weekend, AlphaTauri had a pretty miserable Qatar Grand Prix, bringing both their drivers in uncharacteristically early, which really harmed their race result. And Daniel Ricciardo, we thought he was getting to grips with the McLaren, but again, another really disappointing outing.
Yeah, again, you know, there's been so many teams that are up and down this year. McLaren has been very hit and miss, haven't they? Ferrari have been hit and miss all year, but the last couple of races, they really seem to have got their stuff together. And I think I read somewhere they've scored something like 45 points, might even be more than that, might even be 75 points in the last three races against McLaren, who have literally got a handful of points. So Ferrari have gone ahead of McLaren quite handsomely. And at one point, I thought McLaren might end, you know, in sort of third place in this championship. It's a good car, the McLaren, but it's very on and off. You know, depends on the circuit. Sometimes they turn up and they're just nowhere, and other times they turn up and they're brilliant. But they've got a good driver pairing, I think. Danny Ricciardo's finally getting his head around that car. And, you know, I think next year with the rule changes and stuff, I think McLaren are going to be up there at least. But, yeah, interesting that Ferrari have really come on leaps and bounds these last couple of races.
You're right, Danny Rick, really disappointing. After the summer break, he looked as though he was, you know, making a resurgence. And I'd be pretty sure he'll be looking forward to the end of the season so he can regather his thoughts and strengths and pull that into the 2022 season with the added value of the rule change. Let's go to Nicky from At Lights At. He's got all the post-race stats from the Qatar Formula One Grand Prix.
Hamilton takes victory at 30th different circuit. Alonso records his first podium in 7 years. And Gasly records his first front row start. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Qatar Grand Prix. And we start with Lewis Hamilton, who won from pole for the fourth time from the last five new venues to be added to the F1 calendar. While Hamilton made Losail the 31st venue at which he's taken pole, he went on to become the first driver to win at 30 different venues on Sunday. Max Verstappen finished as runner-up, meaning that he heads to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix with a mathematical chance of winning the title for the first time in his career. Meanwhile, for the third time in 2021, his teammate Sergio Perez failed to reach Q3. Perez recovered to fourth place in the race. Both Red Bull drivers have finished in the top five at all of the last five races. The last time that both Red Bull cars finished in the top five at five or more consecutive races was at the opening 12 rounds of the 2011 season over 10 years ago. Next up, the story of the weekend, Fernando Alonso's first podium finish since 2014. On Saturday, Alonso recorded his best qualifying result since the 2014 Japanese Grand Prix. Following grid penalties for other drivers, Alonso started from the top three on the grid for the first time since the 2013 Brazilian Grand Prix. He went on to take his first podium finish since the 2014 Hungarian Grand Prix, with 146 races having passed since his last top three result. Alonso set a new record for the most races between two podium finishes. Alonso is only the second driver in their 40s to finish on the podium since Nigel Mansell at the 1994 Australian Grand Prix. The only other driver to have done so in the last 26 years is Michael Schumacher at the 2012 European Grand Prix. Pierre Gasly equaled his best qualifying result of the season with fourth place. Following grid penalties, Gasly started from the front row of the grid for the first time in his career. He's the first French driver to start from the front row since Romain Grosjean at the 2012 Hungarian Grand Prix. Gasly fell 9 places in the race, making this the 7th race of the 2021 season at which he's failed to score. It's only the 3rd time this year that he's reached the chequered flag without picking up a point. And finally, there were 2 retirements from the race, Valtteri Bottas and Nicholas Latifi, who each recorded their 4th DNF of the year. For Bottas, it's the highest number of retirements he's recorded in any season of F1 in which he's competed. Prior to 2021, Bottas had recorded only 6 retirements in total in his previous 4 seasons with the Mercedes team.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him, of course, across the race weekends. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Lights Out. Got some brilliant facts and stats, as always, across the race weekends and in between as well. So 2 races left to go. Saudi Arabia is on the 5th of December and then Abu Dhabi on the 12th of December. This is the latest I can remember a season finishing in ages. That's you know, really close to Christmas, isn't it? Literally 2 weeks before Christmas. Who at this stage is your money on? If you were putting a bet on right now, who would you go for and why?
Oh, you know what? It's a really difficult question. Part of me really wants Max to win because it would be a great story after a hardened or a hard-battled season. Max coming out on top, I think, would be a lovely result for Formula One. Lewis, you can't take anything away from his desire to win and the fact that he pushes that car beyond its limits. I think he's just a superb champion and a superb driver. But I would put my money on, I'm not quite sure, but I would like Max Verstappen to win the championship.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think my concern for Hamilton winning it is the fact that, like you say, Toto mentioned the spicy engine, as he put it. We've got the spicy engine. they're bringing the spicy engine back, which is not a good sign, is it, for the Red Bull team? Because that is going to be a fast, fast engine for the last couple of races. It's going to be so close. I genuinely believe it's down to whether someone makes a mistake. I think if one of the drivers makes a mistake, either in qualifying or in the race itself, or someone takes them out, I think that could be the game changer for the entire championship. Other than that, I can see Hamilton winning these last two races. And if Verstappen comes second in these last two races, I don't think that's going to be enough. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating. But we're going to be back to preview properly the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix next week. And we'll get excited about the final two races of the season.
We certainly will. Look after yourself. We'll chat to you next week on the podcast.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.